Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. Welcome everybody. This is the last instruction, and we'll move into the closing ceremony after. But just to give some reflections to try to tie things together. This has been a wonderful way to begin the new year and set a direction or intention. And as we I think it was a very early talk. I talked about right view, and then also mention, which was, say, right view within the world, the sense of the that we're the owners of our actions. So then it's a setting an intention or an understanding that we really want to put in the causes for our well-being and happiness, and for the well-being and happiness of others. It's how we can live in the world really skillfully. Another aspect of right view that takes it a little bit further, say, is the right view that of the Four Noble Truths, that there is dukkha, there is the cause of dukkha, there is cessation of dukkha, there is path leading to cessation of dukkha. And this is an important way to set one's view, because it takes it away from the personal, which is that's just so deeply ingrained. Everything is about me or other, and sort of we can, which is still sort of a relationship to me, in the sense we can put it off and say, oh, it's just other, I don't have to think about it very much. But that's still the focal point is me. So that sense of self and other, being, non-being, and trying to push away. Those are the kind of ordinary modes of people's lives. But the Buddha is encouraging us to reflect in terms of experience. What's the experience? And then looking in terms of cause and effect, and skillful and unskillful in the fact that, and so that sense that these are different, it's more an impersonal category. It's taking it away from that that strong sense of ownership or sense of self and investment in me and mine, and looking at it a bit more clearly or a bit more spaciously and seeing things from the perspective of cause and effect, processes. This is how these processes work. And the skillful and unskillful, wholesome and unwholesome. So dukkha, or normally translated as suffering, but that's a pretty limited translation. Unsatisfactoriness, dis-ease, stress. That is an unskillful effect. And then they say that dukkha, cause of dukkha. So the cause that brings about that dukkha is the unskillful cause. The cessation of of dukkha, ending of suffering, ending of stress, is a skillful effect. It's a desired effect. We want to be free from any kind of discontent, dissatisfaction, dis-ease. And then the path leading to the cessation of dukkha is the skillful cause. So then if we desire this effect, then we'll need to put in the causes. Nothing comes into being without a cause. So it's a kind of spacious way of looking at ourselves and the world around us, so that we're not getting too tangled up and contorted with those kind of assessments and judgments around, yeah, just me and mine. It ends up being very complicated. And in reality, what we would like and what we want is happiness and well-being. We're very much hardwired. And that's something that the Buddha acknowledges. happiness, I mean, he said that's there's many, many different levels of happiness, both on a fleeting level of sensory pleasure, the pleasure of the senses, the happiness of our relationships and our connections with other people, happiness of goodness, but there's that it's also because of that sense of self and ownership and identity, then we end up getting tangled up with attachment. The Buddha sort of is very specific. If there was not happiness, people would not get attached to it. People would not get entangled and stuck. He said, so that's the Buddha is giving us the opportunity to move beyond, because we do tend to bounce between, say, happiness and suffering, joy and sorrow, pain and pleasure, and we keep, you know, bouncing around. And it's I think that's one of the goals of the Buddhist path is one of peace and freedom from, because it gets tiring. Even being it's that seeking and propping up of happiness and well-being. I mean, it gets to be a bit tiring sometimes, even when things are all going really well. So that opportunity for peace and a sense of happiness that isn't shaken by anything. I mean, the Buddha actually says, Nibbana Paramang Sukhang. It's like Nibbana is the highest happiness. It's a refinement of happiness in that it's not just gratification that pops and shifts and changes, but the Buddha also, I think one of the things of that the, especially one hears it from people who aren't familiar with Buddhism, and in sense of like the Buddha only, you know, why is it so pessimistic? The Buddha saying, just talking about suffering all the time. But it's much more like, and these Four Noble Truths are actually set up in a in the time of the Buddha. That was a classical medical model. You look at the symptom of the disease, you look for its cause, you look for the prognosis, and then you look for the treatment. And so in human existence, I mean, the Buddha actually, and there's a place where the Buddha actually sort of says compares himself to a doctor. So he's kind of treating the ills of the world. And of course, the primary ill of the world is this feeling of discontent, dissatisfaction, dis-ease, stress. And the Buddha is pointing to it as this is a symptom, and then of a disease. But there is a cause. I mean, if it was just the primary and only an unmitigated condition, then the Buddha couldn't do anything about it. But he's looking at it and sort of saying, no, this is like an illness that that it has a cause. And like you go to a doctor, and the doctor's going to be asking, well, what are the symptoms? Where does it hurt? What does it feel like? And if you kind of say, oh, I'm fine, it doesn't hurt, well, the doctor can't even treat you. So it's a it's like, okay, we need to understand, okay, what are the symptoms and what's its cause? And this is where the Buddha points to the different forms of desire and attachment and clinging. But is it hopeless? No, there is the possibility of cessation of dukkha. There is the possibility of freedom from suffering. It's not that is the prognosis. There is that ending of dukkha is possible, and there is a cause. There's a course of treatment, the Noble Eightfold Path. So the Buddha is extremely practical, and he's not pointing to something like the Four Noble Truths as something that is to be believed in just blindly and accepted. These are assessments of the say of how of truth, and then the Buddha is giving us the tools to explore it and figure it out for ourselves. Because I mean, in the same way a doctor can't really make us get better. I mean, they can give us medicine, they can give us a course of treatment, but we also have to take the medicine. We have to also have to follow a way of looking after ourselves, so that say whatever illness we have will actually abate and go away. So it's the practice of Dhamma is this course of treatment for the underlying difficulty of inherent in our existence. So that seeing this aspects of dukkha, and the Buddha points to dukkha in many different ways, because there are three kind of main different ways of looking at dukkha. So that there's what's called dukkha. I mean, the actual dukkha that is painful, dukkha that is uncomfortable, dukkha that is unsatisfactory, the actual feeling when we experience grief or loss or frustration or whatever. I mean, all the different ways that we feel the Buddha in this first discourse, he point, birth is dukkha, aging is dukkha, illness is dukkha, death is dukkha, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are dukkha. Those aspects of all the various difficulties. We live in physical bodies that get tired, they age, and we're awash with all sorts of different feelings and reactions, those are there is an inherent discomfort there. So this is ordinary, and it again, it's to be taken note of and reflected on and investigate. How do we ameliorate that dukkha? Because it's not that we're endlessly, we just have to put up with it. No, you have to put forth the effort to figure out ways to settle that, because dukkha always, or almost invariably, keeps us off balance, keeps us uncomfortable. There's another kind of dukkha that the Buddha points to of what's in Pali is called viparinama dukkha, which is the dukkha of separation. It's like, because when something is really pleasurable, like separation from the pleasurable, separation from happiness, separation from well-being, and that is it's deeply disturbing when we're feeling happy, pleasant. And then it ends. But the reality is, of course, it always has to end. And even if it's however refined it is, there is an ending. And it's actually why I say sometimes the say the suffering of meditators, when they've experienced really peaceful, blissful states of mind, and then they're not there. The kind of grief that because the feeling is, I want this to be here all the time, this is how I want to be all the time, but the reality is it's not possible, the having the view that sees it, because the problem is around this is mine and I want it to be here forever for me. And we don't articulate it like that, because if we did, we would say, oh, well, that's silly, I can't do that. But it's more a really understanding how that process really works, and how attachment works. So it's that recognition of the dukkha of separation, when things change, when things aren't the same as how one thought it should be, or how you wanted it to be, or how you assumed it was going to be. And there's dukkha, and the Buddha is very clear in pointing. This is, I mean, one is ordinary, but two, one doesn't have to buy into that dukkha, that dissatisfaction. One can see things. That's one of the say the insight that takes one past and through beyond dukkha is the idiom that's used is like knowledge and vision of the way things truly are. So it's like just that clear knowledge and understanding of the true nature of things, and then when it can't be other than that. And it's like just remember Ajahn Chah sort of saying, it's like, we create so much problems around our life and our existence and what we do, and so much of our problems is similar to somebody who wants ducks to be chickens. I mean, it's just like you think of why is this duck like this? It should be more like that chicken. Well, chickens are chickens and ducks are ducks. I mean, it's just that simple. But and when you put it in that light, then you think, well, that's really absurd. But how much time and energy and emotional investment do we put into wanting the world to be other than it is, wanting the people around us to be other than the way they are, wanting ourselves to be other than the way we are, and then struggling and feeling pain because of that, and it doesn't mean we can't change or the world isn't going to change, but it has to be. There has to be the skillful causes put in place for the skillful effects to manifest. When we step back from that personal identification and personal investment in self, then we can look at things in more broad, spacious manner that allows us to see things from a cause and effect process perspective, and what's skillful, unskillful process. And it's a lot that's where a sense of real happiness and ease really, really comes from. So it's this cultivation of these Four Noble Truths is just so important in seeing the different aspects of dukkha. So that, there's dukkha that is dukkha. And there's dukkha, the separation from the pleasant, separation from happiness and comfort. But then there's also another form of dukkha that the Buddha points to. It's called sankhara dukkha. So that sankhara is like anything of a compounded nature is sankhara. So for something to be of a compounded nature, it is it's constructed, and to have anything constructed, it has to have all different components and pieces. So everything around us of a material nature is constructed in some way. Our mental states, our emotions are all constructed. And when something is constructed, there's all these different components that are kind of out of our control. And they are going to follow all sorts of different agendas. So sometimes they're working against themselves. Sometimes they're working at cross purposes. Sometimes it doesn't necessarily mean good or bad. It's just the way things are. The complexity of our existence means that things are changing, shifting, moving, coming to be, ceasing. On a certain level, we don't have a whole lot of control. And some of it can be, a bit disturbing. Some of it can be really amazing. Like how our body heals, it's really amazing. It's incredibly complex, but it wants to heal. I remember one time our next door neighbor was dying of cancer, and she was really, we would go over there every day and see to her visit and also help look after her. She was really, cancer is just, she's dying and the body is really fading, life force is fading. And then she had a fall and had a bit of a cut on her forehead, I think it was. And so then on one part, the cancer is sort of eating away and the body's falling apart. And then you can visibly see the wound kind of healing, and so the body's trying to heal itself at the same time as it's falling apart, and that's what our human existence is kind of like, and it's all these different processes. That's it's a bit it's kind of stressful. Not in the sense, not even that we even notice it, but that complexity is dukkha. It is the nature of things, but it's also it leaves a sense of dis-ease. Again, the sense of being slightly off balance. And the cessation of dukkha is really the place of of rest and deep peace. So I'd say these understanding dukkha gives us a clarity and a motivation of how do we work with this, what tools are really helpful and appropriate for this overcoming of dukkha, so that the Buddha gives the Noble Eightfold Path and that this process of sila samadhi panna, right view, right right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. This also is constructed. It's compounded. It's a sankhara. But it can be developed and it has an effect. It leads to peace, leads to understanding, leads to well-being, leads to a sense of being truly awake. And with these Four Noble Truths, there is also when the Buddha gave his first teaching, he said, path that there is this possibility of freedom from suffering. Each of the noble truths, and says that each of the noble truths has a corresponding, say, duty or response that we have to appropriately give to that, so that, say, dukkha, suffering, is to be understood. It's to be known clearly. It's to be understood. And that, you know, something that is counterintuitive, because, you know, we really want to, you know, who wants to understand dukkha? We just want to get rid of it. That habit, of course, keeps us skimming on the surface, and we don't really see or clearly understand. And the cause of dukkha, the cause of dukkha is to be abandoned. That's to be abandoned. It's to be let go of. You know, and we tend to do it backwards. We want to abandon suffering, abandon to let go of suffering. But when it isn't known, when it isn't understood clearly, then the cause is still kind of simmering underneath. It's like, you know, if you get a cut on your arm I got a cut. I'll just put a Band-Aid on and then I don't have to see it anymore. But if you haven't cleaned it properly, if you haven't put some kind of disinfectant on it, some kind of antibiotic cream on it before putting a Band-Aid on it, it's going to get infected. So similarly with our own, say, with dukkha, when it's not understood, when it's not sort of, we haven't cleaned up our understanding of dukkha, then we can't really let go of what needs to be let go. And so that seeing and seeing and understanding dukkha doesn't mean kind of wallowing in dukkha. It just means understanding it and reflecting on it and looking at at, well, where is this? Yeah, what is the cause? What is this origin? What's the origin? Where is its place of origin? And the Buddha is pointing back to what he, tanha, desire, and I'd mentioned it already, but desire that is inevitably or inextricably bound up with greed, hatred, delusion. It's inextricably bound up with kind of defilement and attachment. So it's a special kind of desire, but it's kind of prevalent. So the different forms of desire, say, kamatanga, sensual desire, seeking gratification, stimulation from the senses. My happiness is when I see, hear, smell, taste, touch, or think things that are agreeable and pleasant. And it doesn't mean that we can't experience it, but it's when we relate to it with desire and that pinning all of our hopes on maintaining that gratification, then we're at a great disadvantage. And the desire for being, desire for becoming, and that's more around the sense of self, the sense of me, becoming, being, trying to be somebody, trying to make an impression on somebody. How many times do we walk into a room and we're trying to present ourselves in a certain way? And just a desire for being, a desire for becoming, and as long as we're invested in trying to prop that up, that's a burden that we're carrying. Desire for non-being, non-becoming. It's like that pushing away, resisting. Shouldn't be like this. I shouldn't be like this. The world shouldn't be like this. And that resistance, that aversion, is that's desire for non-becoming, non-being. Shouldn't be this way. And that leaves us very, unbalanced, uncentered. So these forms of desire on a certain level, it's really fundamental to our existence, but it's something that we need to investigate, we need to contemplate, we need to see clearly how it works. And it's kind of, on a certain level, it's very simple, very basic, simple things keep spreading out and creating problems for us. One time, somebody came to Ajahn Chah, and they were kind of like they're maybe very learned or very well read or considered themselves. Maybe a bit of a philosopher, and asked Ajahn Chah, what's the essence? What's the heart of the Buddhist teachings? What is what's the central piece of importance of the Buddha's teaching and thought, and Ajahn Chah picked up, and I assume because it was at his seat, it was probably like oftentimes there'd be like a toothwood nearby, and it's and he just picked it, and it's about this size, so he picked it up. So is this a big piece of wood or a little piece of wood? And the person who was asking was sort of, because they were asking in a very kind of formal, kind of religious, theoretical way, you know, and kind of befuddled, and they didn't, I don't understand. And Ajahn Chah said, well, if you wanted to build a house, you'd say, this is a little piece of wood. If you just wanted to pick something and needed you'd say, oh, that's just, you know, that's a really big piece of wood. It's too big. It's all around our desires. We're creating our perception and evaluation of the world and ourselves through the lens of desire constantly. And we're judging it all the time. So there, the problem of our existence is in desire and creating discontent, dissatisfaction, dis-ease. And so that, as say in Buddhist practice, that is our, we need to understand dukkha, how it's formed, understand what sort of desire is there, and then pay attention to abandoning, relinquishing desire, those different forms of desire. And when we do that, then they say that we will experience a sense of ease, a sense of well-being, a release or a cessation of suffering. And it may not be, you know, complete and final nibbana, but it is a cessation of suffering. It's not that it's unremitting suffering. There is ends. And so we have to realize when we experience, we have to pay attention so that when we do experience a ceasing, an ending, a release from suffering or difficulty or complication, that we actually realize it. We pay attention to it. Because, you know, so much of what we, you know, we're on to the next thing according to our desires. You know, we're in the sense of, I need more samadhi. I need more insight. and we keep going for the next experience, and we don't really realize a cessation, an ending, a settling of suffering. Or of that discontent, dissatisfaction. So to really to pay attention, to actually make it real, to realize it, to make it real. Don't keep skipping over, and don't keep missing, because that with, say, the lack of mindfulness and clear comprehension, lack of discernment, we miss, we skip over, we lose sight of what's really important. And the path leading to cessation of suffering is to be developed. It is to be cultivated. That is the word that the Buddha used, bhāve tabanti. It's the same as say bhāvanā in terms of meditation, mental development, cultivation. So that the path leading to cessation of suffering has to be developed, has to be cultivated. And that's putting in the causes for a skillful effect. And cessation of of dukkha is definitely a skillful effect, worthy of putting in the effort. So these Four Noble Truths are a way of looking at our experience, having the tools to develop an understanding and experience of peace and happiness of freedom. This is the Buddha says, this is a happiness that is unalloyed. It's not tainted by anything, perspectives. I mean, sort of like, oh, the Four Noble Truths are sort of like it's like your kindergarten teachings for Buddhism, but really it is the essence, and this is something that the Buddha's this is his very first teaching that he taught to his first five disciples, and it came from a fully awakened mind. Do you think the power of a fully enlightened being, fully awakened being, the power of clarity that the Buddha carried with him, and then this compassionate wish, because his first inclination is, nobody's going to understand this. I'll just tire myself out. I'm not going to bother to teach. But then, say, compassion arose, that wish to teach, who would actually, you know, he thought through who would actually understand this. And then he was awakened in Bodh Gaya. His first teaching took place in Sarnath. So it's about 200 kilometers. He didn't hop on a plane and get there. He walked. He had time to be reflecting as well. What's going to work? What is going to be effective? If I don't want to be tired and put upon by, how is this going to work? So that, the kind of the power of a fully awakened mind, heart, then responding with compassion, these Four Noble Truths come out. And then it's not that he taught the Four Noble Truths and sort of, that didn't work, so I'll teach something else. It was through through his whole 45 years of teaching, these Four Noble Truths were expounded on and come at from all different angles, and all the different teachings that did manifest. And the Buddha says that these Four Noble Truths are like the elephant's footprint, so that all other footprints of various animals, whether they're, say, lions and tigers, or dogs and cats, or cows and sheep, they all fit in this footprint of the elephant. In the same way, all the different teachings fit into this Four Noble Truths, so that as he spent 45 years teaching, expounding, explaining, all the different teachings were really kind of variants or ways of approaching these Four Noble Truths. And it comes up over and over again through the suttas, and so that through the Buddha's life, is that, he said, I teach only two things, dukkha and the ending of dukkha. So it's like these Four Noble Truths are part and parcel, and that's just us pointing to that this possibility of understanding and practice, and that there is a liberation that is possible, and that's something that the Buddha himself in his different practices and his different ways of trying to figure out what's going to work. I mean, he experimented with all sorts of different practices. It was some difficult practice. He'd already lived a very comfortable life, and I said, but this was something that he felt, yes, this is what is really going to bring about, true happiness, true. As I said, that Nibbana is the highest happiness, because it's one of it's not built on desire, it's not built on identity. It is something that can be realized and experienced. So I'll offer that for reflection this morning.
Han damayang dhamma kathaya sadhu karang dadamase sadhu 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 anumodami.
Okay, so there's your tools for beginning the new year, starting with a retreat and meditation and coming together, listening to Dhamma. It's a great way to begin the new year and to reestablish that connection with this refuges and our conduct. What we're doing, where we're putting our importance, what's important to us. So I think that's one of the things that has been, by consciously beginning the year with a retreat like this, and it's just making it clear in one's mind, and that kind of resolution, determination, because it's quite ordinary that as we do anything, we start to get used to it, and we don't reflect on it so clearly. It's just quite natural. So that having times of renewal are really, really important. So that however we do that, whether it's, I mean, on a certain level, that in a Buddhist calendar, the lunar observances once a week are like a renewal. We sort of like renewing our commitment, renewing our connection. When there are particular ceremonies like the Visakha Puja, Magha Puja, Asala Puja, these are kind of big occasions. But there are occasions for renewal, for reconnection, and so that retreat is also an opportunity, and it doesn't have to follow any particular time. But it's the new year, great time to start something new, fresh, and that's something that's very beneficial, I'd like to thank all the organizers who have made this happen. It's a lot of juggling, and a lot of care and attention has to be put in, and people were extremely, everybody was on board with the group in Kuala Lumpur and Singapore, coordinating with each other, setting things up, making sure everything was happening. So just to express my appreciation, and express my appreciation to everybody who made the effort. I mean, it's quite a I'm quite moving to be meditating and practicing with 350 people. I mean, and across 19 countries. That's one of the, I say, one of the benefits of a global pandemic, because things like this we wouldn't even have thought of doing it a year ago, and now with so that this is one of the things that the Buddha has us reflect on, and he himself. like in the first discourse that the Buddha said after he gave the teaching, and he said, emphasizing, you know, it wasn't until I saw these four noble truths and their 12 aspects that I could declare that I was fully awakened. But he also, there's other kind of things that he formulated as well, and it wasn't until I saw the benefit as the benefit, the drawback as the drawback, the way out as the way out, that I could declare myself fully awakened. And so the benefit is the good aspect of something, the pleasant aspect, the fruitful aspect of something. But there's always going to be there's always a drawback as well. And so that seeing the drawback clearly, seeing the difficulty clearly, so it's like that same, so like with pleasure, happiness. Okay, well, it's wonderful, but it has a drawback if we get attached, if we cling. The way out is always that release of desire and clinging. And so that, say, even a global pandemic, that's got to be completely and totally bad for everybody and for all time. But it doesn't have to be, because a benefit is also can be embedded in that if we look for it. So then the opportunity to practice together like this is really it's been wonderful, and it's great to see people plugging in. So that as we go into this new year, just taking the teachings of the Buddha with us, taking the refuges and the precepts with us, taking the perspective that is not getting overwhelmed by the difficulties, and seeing, well, what can I learn from this? Not getting intoxicated by the benefit side, the pleasant side, and say, well, okay, is there something that I'm overlooking here? And how can I mature or grow, make it into something that is more fruitful, beneficial, so that there actually is an escape, a way out, a place of freedom within all of this. And of course, that's what the teachings of the Buddha give us, this opportunity for realizing a true freedom and peace. So I just offer my blessings and offer my good wishes for everybody's health, well-being, and progress in the Dhamma.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.